Now, this paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio. Coming up this morning, we have all kinds of stuff for you. We're going to talk about the father of Black Silicon Valley, Roy L. Clay. Also, we'll talk about one of my favorite subjects ever, the space elevator. And we'll take a trip into the laboratory to talk wine. All that on Tech Talk.
And, of course, it was a huge mailbag.
Indeed it was.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yes. This week we got an email from Mary Ann. Dear Tech Talk, I keep losing my cell phone and have trouble finding it when the ringer's turned off after a meeting. Is there anything that can be done? Also, can I track my phone if it's been stolen? Thanks, Mary Ann. Well, actually, Mary Ann, there is something that that you can do with that. You've got an iPhone, so...
How did you know that?
So your iPhone... I'm psychic.
I got it.
This is technology psychic.
She just said she had a cell phone.
That's right.
Somehow you know she has an iPhone.
So if you have an iPhone, you can turn on cell phone tracking and simply go to settings and then go to iCloud and you scroll down the bottom of the iCloud page and you can turn on cell phone tracking and that will report your location to the iCloud.
Ah.
And it can be tracked. And then you can take another device... either an iPad or another iPhone, you can download the application, Find My Phone.
I was going to say, we're going to demonstrate on the air. That's turned off now, right?
This is the ringer's turned off, and so that you've got Find My Phone. And so what I've done here, I've got my phone that I've turned off the ringer. I've got my iPad here, so I can take, I've got my Find My Phone application on the iPad, and so now I'm going to bring up that particular phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, here we go.
Well, while we're waiting here.
Yeah, we're getting it here. Okay, here we go. Now I can play a sound or send a message to the iPhone. And here we go. I'm now sending the sound to the iPhone. And remember, the ringer is turned off. And it's going to... You hear that?
Whoa.
And that little beep keeps going until you turn it off.
Would you do something about that? I feel like I'm on a submarine.
Is that a bit of a problem? Okay, Find My iPhone alert, and so that's turned off. Now the other nice thing about it is, when I go to this particular Find My iPhone application, it uses the GPS signal and it shows a picture of the phone exactly where it's located.
Wow!
So it shows that we're sitting here at the WFED studios, and it's got us right there in the corner office.
Well, suppose you flew to Ireland for a football game, and you came back and realized you couldn't find your iPhone, and you tracked it.
It showed up there in Dublin. That's exact. Or the other day, somebody at my household couldn't find their iPhone.
Really?
And they said, "Is it at the house, or did he leave it at work, or did he leave it at the restaurant?" So I logged in to find my iPhone, and bingo, it showed up that it was at the house. And then I turned on the little submarine beeper, and we found it in no time at all. So that is a great application.
It was free, right?
It's a free application with the iCloud. Now, of course, if somebody can track you with this, they can track you wherever you are.
Yeah.
So you've got to be very.
I'm just impressed that I downloaded the flashlight onto mine.
That's very good. Suppose you lose your iPhone, you also have another option.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose somebody's stolen your iPhone.
Yeah.
In addition to ringing a beeper, you have a choice of wiping the data off the iPhone or locking it.
Oh.
Now, so that means you got something secure in there. You just wipe it. You could lock it. Now, once you wipe it or lock it, you can no longer find it. It turns off that feature. So finding it is actually quite nice, but this is a good security feature, and it's very good. So suppose I lose my iPhone and I don't have an iPad. How am I going to be able to either beep it or wipe it or lock it? I can go to the website iCloud.com. And I can log into that, and of course you just use your username and password that you use for your iTunes account, which is the same as you use for your iCloud, And then once you log in to iCloud.com, there's a button that says Find My Phone, shows a picture of map, shows where the iPhone is located. You click on that phone, and you got the choice, send a beep, wipe it, or lock it. And so it's actually a very, very nice feature. And if somebody steals your phone, and they don't have a sense to turn that off,
you could track them.
You could track them down, turn them into the police.
But it's a calculated risk because they could get into it and get all of your stuff in the meantime.
They could actually turn it off. And in fact, later in the show, I'm going to talk about a case where this happened. And when the police went to retrieve the iPhone, they discovered a drug cache. It's like an interesting story, but we'll do that later. We'll do that later in the show.
You're cute to keep.
So that was a great email, Marianne. Yeah. And keep those emails coming.
Yeah, and keep your eye on that iPhone.
That's right.
Because she does have an iPhone.
Yes, I keep that eye on the iPhone. We have an email from a loyal listener in Bethesda. Dear Tech Talk, I tried to free up some space on my old PC and decided to save pictures to a disk. I decided to use a DVD write disk, and so that I would, I could put everything on just one giant disk. And then after I wrote everything to the DVD, I permanently deleted all the files off my PC because I had them on disks.
Oops.
Then I bought a brand new laptop. My old laptop's gone. I put in the DVD. I can't read it. I can't read the DVD. And I don't have my pictures, even though I backed them up. Thanks, loyal listener at Bethesda. What should I do? Okay, first of all, loyal listener, when you only have one copy of them, you actually don't have a backup. It's a backup only if you keep the original one on the hard drive. You need two copies for a backup. You need the original data and then the backup of the data. You don't back it up to the DVD and then delete the original data. Yeah, because now you really don't have a backup. You've got one copy of them on a device which is not that long-term way to store it. It's probably not the best way to store it. So let me give you some suggestions of what you can do. First of all, there is an alignment issue on the laser on these DVD drives. Go from drive to drive, the laser could be out of alignment. So I would take your DVD and I would just try every computer that you could find that's got a DVD reader in it. Just go anywhere you could go. Put it in any computers at work, any computers your friends, try to go to older computers. There are also differences in laser quality. And so if you can find a DVD reader that will actually read the device, immediately copy all the files to the hard drive. And that's what you can do. Now, if actually the DVD is corrupted and it's not really a read issue, it's a corruption issue. There is a program that you can get. It's a DVD CD data recovery software tool, Quick Specs version 1.1.1.1. I don't know who the marketing guy was that came up with that numbering system. It seems like at some point they just go to 1.2.
Yeah.
So they got 1.1.1.1, and it can be downloaded from CNET.com. Now, what they do here, it's free when you download it, and you can see whether you can recover the data, and it recovers almost everything. But to get it all, you've got to pay $39 to get the full version. But at least you can test to see whether it would work. Now, if that fails, and you've really got to get this data, your only choice is to go to a data recovery company. And that could cost you hundreds of dollars. Mm-hmm. So I've given you three choices here, and progressively more expensive and more difficult to do. Now, my advice going forward is to maintain a backup. And I would suggest that you back up to an external hard drive.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Much better.
Because, is that $100 now to get
external hard drives have just dropped in price dramatically. And you can back up to an external hard drive. But then if you do that, you want to keep them on the original hard drive. Or else back it up. You need it in two locations. So usually I keep it. Sometimes when I get a new computer, I take the old hard drive and I put it as a secondary drive in the new computer, and I use that as an internal backup. Then I've got an external backup. So you could actually back it up to two different locations, and you could protect it there. Now, actually, what I do is I have signed up for Carbonite. I signed up for Carbonite, and the Carbonite actually works quite nicely, and I just back up continuously with Carbonite, and then I don't even use an external drive because I had the same issue with all of the pictures on my laptop. But that was a great question, loyal listener, And best of luck with your DVD data recovery. We got an email from Rich in Richmond. Dear Tech Talk, when I exit from one of my video games, the screen looks like a blending of colors, mostly pink and transparent glass. I can't read anything on the screen. I got 2 gigabytes of RAM, an Intel Pentium dual core processor running at 2.7 gigahertz. What's the problem? How can I solve it? Thanks, Rich. Well, actually, what's happening is your video game is resetting the video settings when it's running, and when you exit, it's failing to set them back again. That's what's going on here. So what I would recommend you do is, first of all, simply take and exit the game properly. Maybe you're not exiting properly, and it's and you're not giving it a chance to do all of its housekeeping, as you would say, as it's exiting, so it could reset it back. Now, some games are not very good with their housekeeping, and then you've got to go back in and reset the video mode. So if you have to do that, you've got to, you know, you could right-click on the desktop, and assuming you can at least see something, you'd try to come up with the screen properties, and then you try to change the resolution to something that your system, your video system, supports would be the way to do it. Now, the other option, of course, is that you may actually want to contact the game manufacturer if it really is a recurring problem, and simply exiting properly won't fix it, because it is a pain to have to go back and reset it. And I occasionally have had games in the past that have done that. It's usually the older games. The newer games tend to not have that problem. Mm-hmm. That's a great question, and you might go to the website for the game manufacturer, and they might have an update or a patch for you. We got an email from John in Fairfax. Dear Tech Talk, why are there always programs that don't respond when I'm shutting down Windows? And I've got to end them manually to shut down Windows. It's very annoying. I'm using XP Pro Service Pack 3. Love the show. Thanks, John. Well, that is a problem. You know, sometimes that happens to me. I'll turn off the computer and it'll just simply hang there because one of the programs won't shut down. And then you get a message that pops up that says, program not responding. Should we force the shutdown? So you can have a forced shutdown. Now, two things could be happening here. Either Windows is just too impatient and it's not giving the program enough time to actually shut down properly, or the program is actually legitimately hung up. Now, in most cases, if I wait a minute or so, even though that window pops up, the program will eventually shut down. So I typically give it about a minute additional time. And if it still doesn't shut down, then I push the button, and that's a forced close, which is not always the best way to do it because, say, in the example of that game, if you do a forced close, it won't close out and change the video back. So you really... If you do a forced close, it means the program can't do the exiting housekeeping. It's not the best thing. So I usually wait a minute before I force it. I'm not too quick on it. But and then you may also do some analysis to figure out which program is hanging up, and you might go back to the software developer on that particular program, see if there's a patch for that, because sometimes programs will hang up, and that's an ongoing problem. Or you might you might decide that particular program has been running in the background. You don't use it anyway, and you just make certain it doesn't run in the background. So, you know, if it is annoying, you could actually try to do further analysis on it. That was a good question.
Yes.
We got an email. Dear Doc and Jim, I'm starting to back up files and photos with a Lexar 64-gigabyte memory stick. Oh, that's not a good idea.
Really?
No.
Why not?
It's not really, I wouldn't call those guts good backup. There, I'll tell you why in a minute. There are no instructions with this stick, and I'm the type of person who needs a step-by-step instruction. Can you help? Thanks, Alex. Well, first of all, I recommend you don't use a memory stick for backing up data. It's okay just to move data around. The problem with memory sticks, they use flash memory. Flash memory has a limited number of times you can read and write to it, and then they wear out. And so they're also, you know, more subject to static electricity. So I would not use them for a backup. I would use them to move files from computer A to computer B. Temporary movement is fine, but not as a backup.
So when you're talking about a memory stick, you're talking about a flash drive.
A thumb drive.
A thumb drive. I didn't realize there was only a limited number of times you can open stuff on
Yeah, yeah. It's actually limited.
Whoa.
A limited number. I mean, it's in the thousands. I mean, it's a lot.
But still,
it's not of the quality that you need for really backing up. It's really more designed for long-term temporary storage. And if you want to do a back, and the thing is, it's also subject. It can be corrupted so easily if you pull it out too quickly, or you could have static electricity. So I would not use it for a backup at all. I would use, as we said earlier, an external hard drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would use an external hard drive. And then what you'd want to do is just do, and you know, if you have an external hard drive, then you could actually back up the files. You could back up, you know, critical files. You could copy a sub. You could do it manually. Copy the subdirectories. Copy the files. Now, it's probably better, though, to have a backup program that does it continuously. So, I mean, I do like some programs. I do like Macrium Reflect. And it actually will back up the hard drive. You can either set it full backup or incremental backup. And so as you add files, it will automatically back up to the external hard drive. That's probably the best way to do it. Then you don't have to remember anything. It's always done. Now, actually, as I said earlier, I've gone to Carbonite. So I just do incremental backups to Carbonite over the web, which is very convenient because I do a lot of traveling. So no matter where I am, my laptop's always backed up to Carbonite. And if, you know, somebody would steal my laptop, I would have every single file that I need, and I could then restore it all to another laptop. So it gives you, you know, peace of mind if, you know, when you're traveling a lot with the device. So I do like that as an option. We got an email from Mary. Dear Tech Talk, how does EasyPass work?
Good question.
Yeah, do I have any privacy concerns? Also, what is this EasyPass Flex for the new hot lanes that are coming to Northern Virginia soon? Thanks, Mary. Well, EasyPass, as you know, is an electronic toll collection system used on most of the toll roads, bridges, and tunnels in the northeastern U.S., from the south and from south in Virginia to West Virginia, west to Illinois. It's currently used by 25 different agencies spread across 14 states, and they make the EasyPass Interagency Group, the IAG. All members of this group use the same technology, which is really convenient. You can drive to New York always using EasyPass. Now, EasyPass tags are battery powered, and they're made exclusively by the Traficcom, formerly Mark IV Industries. They make all these devices. The reason they're battery powered is that you want to be able to send the signal back when you're going like 30 miles an hour and quite a long distance. And if they were passive RFID, that's radio frequency identification RFID, if they were passive RFID devices, you'd have to be very close. You'd have to be maybe 10 feet away. But you really want to, you know, do the toll information when you're 50 feet away or 100 feet away when you're traveling fast. So what they do, they send out an interrogation. Your battery, since you've got battery power, it sends back a very strong signal so it can pick it up at a distance. Now, these work at 915 megahertz signal. That's the band. They send about 500 kilobits per second using 256-bit packets. See, this is probably you don't even need to know this, but you know the techie guys probably would like to know that. Now it's all the same frequency band, all the same protocol used across all of these EasyPass systems. Now what this EasyPass Flex is, there's a switch on it. And you can switch it between HOV mode or regular mode. So when you put the switch in the regular mode, it'll charge you when you're on the hot lane. If you switch it to the HOV mode, it interrogates you, but it doesn't charge you. And I don't know how they can tell whether you've really got somebody in the car when you switch it to HOV. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I've got that question. But so there's just a switch on it. The nice thing is I know in Virginia, if you've got an EasyPass now, you can go to the EasyPass store. I think Motor Vehicles got it, and you can just trade it in. And they'll give you a flex EasyPass, flex transponder. And so I think I'm going to try it, and I'll do a little bit more research on how they can figure out if you're doing HOV or not.
Well, see, I think that's the thing. The lanes that are being built on the Beltway are not HOV; they're hot lanes, high occupancy tolls. So
right.
Priced based on usage.
Except if you switch HOV, they don't charge you.
I see what you're saying.
If you switch it to HOV, they're free. If you leave it in the regular mode, they charge you.
Okay.
So how do they know that somebody doesn't switch it to HOV and there's only one person in the car? But the thing is, in Virginia, I think everybody's going to be on the honor
why
system.
Why do I have...
Who's going to do that, Jim?
Have you ever looked at the compliance numbers for the HOV lanes?
So
it's amazing.
So I'm going to do some research on that. Maybe they have a camera, and they photograph who's in the car.
They might, and they also, I'm sure they're going to use officers to patrol those lanes.
But how can they tell what your switch is set for? I don't know. I'm just
all kinds of questions.
It's all kinds of questions. I have to do more research on this particular question. Once I get my flex tag, I'll do some.
Well, that's right.
I'm gonna have one. I'll try it out. Now let's talk about privacy. There've mm-hmm. been a lot of people worried about privacy because actually the E-ZPass data is stored. They know exactly where you've been and it's time stamped. Moreover, many roads, they'll give you this data that it says it's 16 miles to the Beltway and it's a 14-minute drive. They actually use E-ZPass data to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually cataloging and tracking your E-ZPass number as you drive down the road, and all of that data is available. This data can be subpoenaed. It's been used in employment cases where people said they were sick or they were working, and they checked the E-ZPass records and it shows that they were heading to the beach. It's been used for divorce cases. It's been used for murder cases where, people they would get that and it would go against whatever alibi they had. So these privacy issues are actually quite of concern for people. So if that's an issue for you, don't use it. Now, I'm wondering when they're going to use them for speeding tickets. Because in fact, if they've got
sure.
the E-ZPass and they take they interrogate you as you drive, they can calculate your
Absolutely.
Average speed between those points.
Sure.
And I'm thinking this may end up being worse than the speed cams.
Oh yeah, it'll be automatic.
Automatic. Now at this point, I don't know any jurisdiction that's done it. But I'm thinking if Maryland figures out that they can make money, Maryland's going to be the first state to go for it.
No kidding. If they can make money in Maryland.
If they can make money, they're going to go for it. Well, that was a great question, and I'm going to do that additional research on the E-ZPass Flex Tag to see the enforcement method.
I had no idea these things were battery-powered.
Yeah.
So how long will these things last?
I don't know. I think it hardly uses any battery power
uh-huh.
because it's only when it's interrogated.
Right.
They probably last a long time.
Yeah, I've had an E-ZPass for a long time, so at some point it could theoretically wear out.
It could theoretically wear out. I've had one for a long time, but that's also another good question for the research department.
Yes.
We'll check that out.
This is your Classroom of the Airwaves, Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Federal News Radio, which airs on these following great radio stations: WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WTOP FM HD2 Washington, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. And we'll be back with more on Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Robots in IT.
Ah, yes. Today we're going to be discussing Roy L. Clark Sr. Roy L. Clark Sr. designed and built the first Hewlett-Packard computer, and is affectionately known as the godfather of Black Silicon Valley. When Roy Clark Sr. started programming computers in the Bay Area in 1958, Bill Gates was 3 years old, and universities didn't even have computer science programs. Clay was born in 1930 and grew up in Kinloch, Missouri, a segregated town of 5,000 in a home without indoor plumbing. His neighborhood had no street lights, and in those areas, police had the habit of picking up boys like Clay if they left their community.
Mm-hmm.
This was a bad neighborhood for Roy to grow up in, but he survived. To earn money, he cleaned at a local pool hall, and he got pretty good at shooting pool. In elementary school, he displayed an early proficiency and love for mathematics. In 1940, by the way, he honed his math skills because he was also, running a sort of a local gambling opera, where people would craps games and he'd keep all the scores. And so he actually got very good at adding in his head this thing, and that sort of got him. I mean, that sort of actually was a motivator to learn math, I'd have to say. In 1947, he was admitted to St. Louis University, one of the first blacks to attend that university. When Clay graduated with a degree in mathematics in 1951 with a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics, he applied for a job at McDonnell Aircraft and was invited to interview. But I hate to go through this, but this, once he got there and the interview saw that he was black, he was said, "We don't have jobs for professional Negroes." This was like, you just can't imagine what the barriers that he had. He worked as a teacher until McDonnell Douglas eventually did hire him in 1956. And there, along with everyone else, he began learning programming. He moved to the Bay Area in 1958, working for Lawrence Radiation Laboratory as the lead programmer. Talk about a guy who really achieved. As the lead programmer for the fastest computer ever built up to that time, he wrote programs to simulate radiation and explosive activities of atomic bombs. In 1962, Control Data hired him as a manager of the COBOL and Fortran programming activities. In 1965, he applied for a position at Hewlett-Packard when they advertised a startup computer division. He was actually hired by Bill Hewlett directly, and he was offered the job as director. Mr. Clay led the team that engineered HP's entrance into the computer market with the development of the 2116A computer in 1966. Not only was Mr. Clay director of the first HP Research and Development Computer Group, he also developed software for the 2116A computer. Now, Clay expanded the HP affirmative action programs because Hewlett really believed in diversity in the workplace. He was one of the first people to enter. And he began hiring black engineers and recruiting them from Morehouse College. And because of that activity and his desire to help youth get into technology, he became affectionately known as the godfather of black Silicon Valley. At that time, when he was in Palo Alto, there were places where Clay could not design, could not dine, places where he could not live. And he lived in the only San Jose apartment that accepted blacks. In the early 70s, at the onset of Silicon Valley as we know it today, the premier venture capital firm, Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers, selected Mr. Clay as the computer consultant for prospective investments in startup companies. Get this. He was the person that ran the initial investments into tandem computers, in Compaq, and Intel. Think about that. He was back at the very beginning of this.
Mm-hmm.
He served as Palo Alto's first black city councilman in 1973 and later as vice mayor. When he was galvanized by the Nixon-era policy that of proposal of benign neglect of the poor neighborhoods, he helped organize networking events for black technology workers and try to pull youth into the area. Later, he started his own company, Rod L. Electronics, which set the standards for dielectric testers. See, all of these devices, FET transistors, all have a dielectric layer, and you want to see how strong that dielectric layer is when you apply a voltage to it. And so he actually had created standards for dielectrics, and almost all the electronics sets that at that time were tested by his electronic devices. Now, he wanted to hire minority youth who had potential, even if they didn't have the right degree. So Because you see, they didn't have computer science programs, and so many of the youth who had the capacity didn't have the degree that technically would be required then. And so he started looking for a way to determine the aptitude of somebody when he would interview them. And he noticed there was a real correlation between math and game skills like chess and bridge. So when he would hire people at HP, he'd ask if they had any hobbies. And if any of the kids that he was interviewing liked chess, he tended to hire them.
Wow.
So this Roy L. Clark, the more I read about him, I tell you, I read a lot about him, and I'm just impressed by where the barriers that he overcame to make such an impact in Silicon Valley. The man who designed and built the first Hewlett-Packard computer and known affectionately as the godfather of Black Silicon Valley, Roy L. Clay, Sr.
Every week you come up with something new. In fact, for our listeners who don't normally listen to the show because we're on at a different time today, Profiles in IT is a regular feature of Tech Talk on Tech Talk, I should say, here on Federal News
Radio.
Because
it always turns out it's the people behind the technology that make the most interesting story.
Now, what you're about to learn is that paying attention could pay off in terms of free food, right?
That is correct.
Because after the commercial break, we're going to have a quiz. And if you can answer the question to the quiz, you get free tickets for food to the Escoffier Street. Stratford University. So stand by. Tech Talk coming back in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross, filling in today for Dr. Richard Schertz. And as he has noted in the past, I am really good at draining the water out of the academic pool because my quizzes are usually pretty easy. Today we talk about Roy L. Clay, Sr., who was, as we noted in Profiles in IT, the godfather of the Black Silicon Valley. As he grew up in a poor neighborhood in St. Louis, he had a job as a kid to make money. What was that job? Where did he work? If you have that answer to that question, the correct answer, you could win tickets for two, fine dining to the Escoffier at Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church, or at Cafe Kareem at the campus in Woodbridge. In order to get that answer to us, you need to call us right now. And the way to do that, if you're calling from west of Kinloch, Missouri, the number is 877-936-9333. If you're calling east of the Bay Area, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. The pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio.
You know, the Mars rover has really been performing quite well this week. I just love this. It's such a huge NASA success. Mm-hmm. The Mars Curiosity deployed its arm for the first time this week. That's very important because it's going to have to pick stuff up to get samples, and the arm's working perfectly. Then the ChemCam, which is basically it fired a laser for the first time using a beam, and then it shined instruments on the dust from the laser hit, and they tried to interrogate, as they say, a fist-sized rock, which they called Coronation. It's just it's a rock about 3 inches in diameter. Now, Curiosity also successfully testivated the steering actuator so it could move its wheels. This is the first time that NASA moved the wheels on Mars. Then Curiosity completed its first drive. They drove 3 meters forward, performed 260-degree rotations to sort of, you know, point the imaging cameras in different directions, and then it drove backwards 3 meters in order to test the wheels in the opposite direction. Now, NASA is also turning on the sample analysis, which is an instrument which will pull in atmospheric gases from Mars, and they'll test what's in those gases to see if they can determine the composition of the atmosphere. Now, within days, Curiosity is going to start its journey to its chosen destination on Mars, Glenelg, which is around 400 meters away, and they hope to obtain their first drill rock samples at Mars at this location. This is great. Everything is working on this thing. I'd love to track the progress.
It is a very slow-moving device, is it not?
Yeah, it moves at 0.06 miles per hour. Okay, the Space Elevator Conference.
Oh, I just love this.
Oh, yeah, the Space Elevator Conference is being held in Seattle this weekend. I always like to track the results of the space elevator. Now, this is an elevator that goes all the way to space. Now, you might say, how can that be?
How can that be, Doc?
What's holding it up?
What is holding it up?
Okay, let's have an experiment. Suppose you would take a rope, and you tie a weight at the end of the rope, and then you start spinning around, and the rope is going out horizontally as you spin around, and it's being held out horizontally because of the centrifugal force exerted by that rock as you spin around. That's the principle of the space elevator, except in this case, the rope is attached to the equator, and it's a very, very long string that goes way out into space,
and there's a
weight at the end, and as the Earth spins around, that weight, which would be a satellite or some kind of object out there, would pull the ribbon very tight, and then you could then have an elevator that could go right up the ribbon. How does this sound?
This sounds like there's a whole lot that could go wrong.
There's a lot that could go wrong. First of all, you don't want an airplane to run into your ribbon.
That could be a problem.
That would be a problem. Now here's the issue. They can't use just regular materials because they weigh too much, and the weight of the materials would be so heavy and produce so much strain that they would break. And so they actually don't have a physical material that's suitable for the ribbon.
So they would really just use ribbon, right?
Well,
that wouldn't be strong enough.
No, ribbon would not be strong
enough.
Scotch tape? And so they have theoretically shown that carbon nanotubes are strong enough.
Ah.
So this is a very dense structure of carbon nanotubes where we have a single atoms of carbon form a small tube, and it's very light because it's hollow on the inside but extremely strong because it's such a densely packed collection of carbon atoms. And carbon nanotubes have the low density and the tensile strength to be successful. The problem is they can't make carbon nanotubes thousands of miles long.
No,
they can make carbon nanotubes in the lab that are just very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to scale the carbon nanotube tube technology. And so everybody is like waiting for carbon nanotubes to be a mature technology so they can get carbon nanotube ribbons.
And, of course, this might cost more than $5.
It's possible it could cost more than $5. So what's the purpose of the conference?
They
want to get all the technical people together to talk about the issues and what the barriers are. We all know what the barrier is. We don't have the carbon nanotubes yet. They also would like to have seminars to raise public awareness about the space elevator. And the reason they want public awareness raised is that they need money. And if the public doesn't say, "Hey, let's just spend $100 million on the space elevator," they're afraid that may not be spent. And then finally, they're hoping that somebody's going to show up with a carbon nanotube breakthrough.
Guess what?
It's not. I haven't heard it.
No, and I'm not going to ride it when they build it.
It'll be a while, and it goes up very slowly.
That kind of time.
When you go up, it might take several days to get up into outer space because you're going up very slowly.
Well,
And of course, how do you power the thing? And,
right.
And they frequently will, they're thinking of shining a laser on it and using the electrical power generated by the laser to actually propel it up the carbon ribbon.
Here's the thing. I don't think I want to be on any kind of elevator that's moving way too fast.
Yeah. And there are also issues that there's, as it goes through the radiation belts, you know, it might create a problem. Now, what they're thinking is that they're projecting that looking at the rate of technology development, that carbon nanotubes may be mature enough around 2041.
Okay, good.
So we got to wait a few years. But in 2041, Jim, you may be able to just take the ride of your life.
I doubt it.
Now, the reason they want to do it is that then space launching a satellite will be one-tenth the cost because they just send it up by elevator, mm-hmm. and they don't need a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. All you want to know about space elevators.
How about when it goes through the Earth's atmosphere? Would it then burn you to a crisp?
No, because it comes down very slowly.
Ah.
It's up very slow, down very... There's not the normal reentry stuff.
I'm sorry.
It's very, very slow.
This is just not for me.
I know. I can see that.
Well, we hope this is for you. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We'll be right back with more after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. You know, iPads are ruling the tablet market.
Indeed they are.
The International Data Corporation released preliminary data on the Worldwide Quarterly Media Tablet Tracker. It shows that the total worldwide tablet shipments for the second quarter of 2012 were estimated to be about 25 million units, which is up from 18.7 million units the last quarter. Apple shipped 17 million iPads last quarter, which is itself up from 11.8 million the last quarter. It turns out that Apple is just ruling the market. Apple has sold way more iPads than anybody else. The obvious connection here is that the iPad is the driving tablet force for all tablet sales, 17 million iPads for Apple versus their nearest competitor, 2.4 million tablets for Samsung. And see, Apple doesn't even like that 2.4 million. That's why they have sued Samsung for patent violations.
And like everything like rectangular shape and crazy stuff
like
that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, uh-huh. They patented curved edges. They have the on-off switch in the middle of one side. I mean, I hope that look and feel stuff just gets thrown out by the courts. But they're winning the sales. That's also why their stock shot up. And all of the mobile devices are creating a new phenomenon that's creating security concerns. BYOD, bring your own device.
Mm-hmm.
A growing number of companies are embracing BYOD, and they're just ignoring the mobile security issues. I mean, actually, employees are just demanding to bring their iPhones to work. I mean, we support iPhones at Stratford on our network.
Mm-hmm.
The number of companies investing in mobile management and security solutions related to bring-your-own-device programs is growing. The result is that many companies are putting themselves and their data at risk by jumping into BYOD without properly securing employee iPhones, iPads, and other devices. According to a study by OnForce, more than half of the technicians that help businesses implement BYOD have seen a 25% increase in demand associated with employee devices, either setting up individual devices or broader BYOD options. Less than a third of those technicians have seen an increase in requests for mobile device security solutions. You see, this, and what this gets at is, suppose you have access to the company network and you lose your cell phone. That's a security breach. So how is the company going to respond to that, and how are they going to protect the company assets? Now, this implies that the number of businesses are moving forward with official or unofficial BYOD options without implementing mobile management or security. Nearly two-thirds of the technicians working in BYOD have seen an uptick in the number of devices used by workers, will increase in diversity of devices over the year. This is an employment opportunity. Companies need to figure this out. So if you're interested in honing your IT skills, I would look at bring your own device security as it relates to iPhones, iPads, and all these other things. There's, where there's a problem, there's an opportunity at right. all cases.
Mm-hmm.
AT&T is planning to shut down their 2G network on 2017. Now, of course, everybody's gone to is moving on to 3G. 2G mm-hmm. is really hardly anybody's on 2G anymore.
Sure.
But you know, they've got, but they do have some people that, that stay on 2G. Probably these are the people that still have the big clunky phones. That, you know, there's some people that just love their old phones, you know, and they don't even like text messaging. They somehow think a phone is to make a phone call.
I find it hard to believe there's anybody out there less technologically advanced than I am.
Yeah, but you were
even
very
I have.
You were very you have an iPhone
an i4
an i4s
uh-huh. No, not the not
the 4s.
No,
just
no,
the,
no,
just
I don't have Siri on mine.
You don't have Siri, so
no.
So they have announced, because they think they legally have to do this, so they're going to end it. The end date of 2G network is 2017 January 1st. They disclose that in SEC filing. The carrier hopes that both its GMN voice and edge data networks will end about 4.5 years from now. Only 12% of its regular subscribers are using 2G-only phones today. Okay, these are 12% of these guys are Luddites, and they need to move on and get on mm-hmm. with life and get on to at least the 3G network.
Sure.
They expect this transition to be fairly smooth and uneventful. So the CNN's top tech trends for 2012. This is kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, CNN, you know, I like these lists of tech trends. We'll see what we have. Let's see if we agree with it. Touch computing is number one. I'd say first Apple had it. Now even Microsoft is coming out with touch computing device. I'd have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Social gestures. This would be automatic sharing on the web with apps. So that, you know, basically this is a trend where you'll install an app and it will automatically share your stuff to Facebook and to LinkedIn. And there's definitely a trend there. I don't really like to share, so I never allow my apps to share, but that is a trend, and many people like that. Near-field communications and mobile trends are a major push. The next generation of iPhone is going to support near-field communications. The Android already does. And what that is, it's a protocol where you can just hold your phone up close to a device at the store, and you can make a payment without even bringing out your credit card. All your credit card information is in your cell phone. You just go there, and you see something comes on your cell phone, the dollar amount, and you approve it, and bingo, you pay. So it's going to be the end of credit cards with this near-field communications. Apple refused to put near-field communications on their 4S phone because they didn't think the security was sufficient, but I think they're weakening. It looks like it's going to come out on the 5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, beyond the iPad. That's a new trend. The iPad started a trend, but now everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. You got Google, Microsoft, and Amazon. TV everywhere. What we're looking at is people having TV on their iPad, their iPhone, on their computer, so that TV is going to become ubiquitous. Voice control, Siri commands. So these are spatial gestures where you can actually move and connect the thing like with Kinect. So these are all things that are moving forward. And, of course, HTML5 is another trend.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
budget analyst, the vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Here's an example of a liquid repeller that has been invented, and it was inspired by a carnivorous plant.
Really?
I love to see inventions that are inspired by biology. When I, in my previous life, we would look at comparative physiology, and we came up with a lot of inventions that were inspired by what happens and how biological systems process signals, how the eyes work, and all sorts of interesting inventions came out of that. And here's another example of it. A team of Harvard researchers wanted to create the ultimate liquid and solid repelling surface. They studied the Nepenthes pitcher plant, where curious insects are trapped by its slippery walls. So what it is, the insects go inside to try to get some nectar, and the walls are so slippery that they can't
get out.
The tropical plant inspired the creation of SLIPS. Oh, this acronym is kind of odd. Self-healing, slippery, liquid-infused, porous surface. They must have created that to get funding.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a funding acronym. It was a synthetic material that utilizes nano microstructured substrates. The coating is repellent to water, motor oil, asphalt, concrete, black paint, and of course, bugs. The team has published a number of papers on the material, including one that demonstrates its ice and bacteria repelling properties. This is another example of technology transfer from nature. There's a fun YouTube video on this where they show they throw oil on it and the oil just comes right off. But there's a lot of potential when you try to apply things in nature to invent new devices by man.
Why, this could work on a computer keyboard, maybe.
It possibly could be, yeah, to keep
water and stuff out.
Keep water out, yeah, that's possible. The justice has approved the purchase of more bandwidth by Verizon. Verizon Wireless is going to pay $3.9 billion for the spectrum, and it will allow it to add to its capacity for the 4G LTE wireless broadband network. Regulator saw the transfer of the unused spectrum to Verizon as a positive one for consumers. Verizon was buying it from, actually, the cable companies. Verizon actually is beginning to slow down on its deployment of Fios. You know, the Fios fiber optic network was extremely expensive. It was not as profitable as I think they thought it would be. So they're beginning to slow down the development of it. And what they were doing, they put together a cross-marketing deal. If the cable companies would sell them this spectrum, then they would start offering cable services in the Verizon store, kind of a cross-marketing deal. The Justice Department thought this would be kind of a violation of antitrust regulation, so they approved the sale of the wireless spectrum, but they did not approve the cross-marketing. So, actually, I was kind of surprised that Verizon is slowing down on the Fios deployment, but I've got it in my neighborhood, so I'm happy. So the people that already got it are going to get to keep it.
And you get to keep us. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Heard weekly here at 9 o'clock on Saturday mornings. You can learn more about Stratford University by checking us out on the web at stratford.edu. And also learn more about this show. Everything you ever wanted to know about Tech Talk is on the web at TechTalkOnline.com. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
An example. executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford Culinary Arts and Hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it's time to bring out the laboratory experiment.
Yeah, this ought to be fun.
Yeah, we're going to aerate some red
You'll
wine
You'll need to
here.
Hold it up to your microphone so people can see it.
Yes, here, I'm going to hold it up to the mic. This is the Venturi, V-I-T-U-R-I, aerator. And what it has, the reason I like it, it uses a Venturi effect. The air, the wine goes through this device by two small holes, and it sucks in air using the Venturi effect. Mm-hmm. Whenever you pass over the surface of a hole, you create a vacuum, and you can pull, and it then creates this vacuum that then sucks in air, and it mixes with the wine, and it aerates the wine one glass at a time. I mean, I've been using this, we had friends in Colorado that showed us this.
Uh-huh.
And I ordered it. It came in this week. It's so much fun. So I've got this. Let me get this. I've got this Cabernet here, Jim.
Oh, it looks delicious.
Now, Jim, listen. Now, the thing is,
it's
the Cabernet.
It's only 10 o'clock.
I really like this Raymond Cabernet from Napa Valley. It's really excellent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
and so I'm going to take and pour this. I hope David Byrd doesn't come in when he hears we got wine.
I doubt that's going to happen.
I don't want Dave. Okay, I'm going to pour it through, and you're going to hear the Venturi operating. Can you hear that?
I can hear that.
It's going in. There are two Venturis. It's operating. Oh, yeah. This is
delicious.
A huge glass.
It is. This is like the big gulp of wine.
That's a big glass.
I hope you got a driver today, Doc, because that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
there's no batteries. It's just two holes in this thing.
It's just two holes, and it pulls through with the Venturi effect. It just sucks in the air, and you can hear it sucking in the air. That's what that noise is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was questioning whether this thing really made a sense. I would take blind tests. Take two glasses, pour one through the Venturi aerator and one just into the wine glass, and I would let people test both glasses, and invariably, even people that don't drink that much wine would say the one that went through the aerator tasted better.
Interesting. So I guess after four or five tests, it really doesn't matter anymore, does it?
It doesn't matter. So you can aerate wine if you pour it into a carafe and let it sit for an hour and a half, but this way you can aerate it one glass at a time.
That's amazing.
In real time.
And do it a lot quicker.
So those of you that drink box wine and only take out one glass at a time, you can aerate your box wine one glass at a time.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you at all, Jim. No, I think Andrew needs that right now.
Maybe
Andrew.
Right this second.
Yeah, maybe I should send in this Cabernet to Andrew. But he may not be.
Well,
you've
got a driver. Just drink it on the way.
I'll just drink it. I got it in a cup here.
Advice for
so you can go to Venturi.com, V-I-N-T-U-R-I.com. I ordered the thing online. It was like $30 or something. It was a great deal. So there you go, our laboratory experiment and I love this because when I serve wine now, I can talk about the Venturi effect. It's like
fantastic.
Physics and wine combined.
I'm sure your guests will just be mesmerized.
Thanks for spending part of your Saturday morning with us here on Tech Talk Radio. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 in the nation's capital on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2, Federal News Radio. Learn more about this show by going to techtalkonline.com. And send us an email, if you would, questions we can answer here on the air. Also, learn more about our sponsors, Stratford University, by going to stratford.edu. See you next week here on Tech Talk Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy error.